You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour One Podcast.
This might be college football heaven.
Live in Nashville, day three, SEC basketball tournament, and a big day, a lot happening here. We'll update you on that throughout the next 4 hours, but the number one seed in the tournament is set to go home. That's the big story here. We say hello to you, and we're delighted to be here, and the commissioner of the SEC will join us in a couple of minutes. We've had country music stars. We had Jordan Davis on yesterday. We've had basketball coaches. Right now, we begin with one of the hottest comedians.
Oh yeah,
in the country. I don't know. Is Bargatze here yet?
He's coming on next. He's on next segment. It's that Southern comedy is taking over. Everybody in the SEC knows John Chris, Leanne Morgan, and Nate Bargatze.
John Chris is the name we're talking about. That was the name on the tip of my tongue.
There you go.
I mean, you really are. Thanks for being here.
Absolutely.
It's great to see you.
Pride of, you know, we grew up together. Not probably the same era, but I grew up in going to Sanford in Birmingham, Alabama.
You were an athlete.
Paul Feinbaum is all we knew about.
Really?
There was no other trusted source except for you.
And by the way, a lot's changed since you left.
Oh, yeah.
So you went to Sanford on a scholarship?
I went to Sanford. Well, I walked on.
You walked on.
I don't want to be fact-checked at the first segment
here. Yeah, CNN just corrected me.
Yeah, they go, nah, no. I walked on to the Sanford tennis team in 2002.
That's amazing.
And I made my way onto scholarship. And look at Sanford athletics now, the basketball. Do I take full credit? Not full. But you do notice that once I graduated, I mean, look at us now.
And I learned today that somebody that I used to work with, you worked for him.
Oh, yeah. Brad Radice.
Who now
Brad
is a
big... Brad Radice, baby. Yeah, that's what we call... Yeah.
Brad's a big shot at Sanford.
Yeah, big in that...
I don't know what he does there, but he's a big shot.
Big in the state of Alabama, too. We used to work at CBS.
Okay. Everyone knows you as a comedian.
Yeah. I
mean, and you told me something which blew me away a minute ago, and I'm... You're the son of a preacher man.
I feel like I'm going to be a little offended by that you say you looked at me and you go, that blew you away.
It did, because... I live in a community that the most famous preacher in the world, Billy Graham, grew up, and his son became a preacher.
Yeah.
And you became a comedian.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing if you think about it. I mean, comedy is it's a little different take on the same issue. You look at the world and you don't like it, and you try to change it. Some try to change it through, changing people's hearts and spirits. I come at it a different way. Yeah. You know.
Did you ever think about following
In preaching?
Yeah.
You know what? One time, a church. I used to do comedy in churches a lot. I used to do.
I bet that was hilarious.
I used to do a lot of comedy shows in churches, and I did a Saturday night show, and they said, hey, our preacher is sick, or can you stay and do tomorrow? And I did it. I did preach one time. That was my whole career.
Was it... Joel Osteen.
You know what?
Joel Osteen, famous.
Oh, yeah, Joel
He opens
Osteen.
With it. He said, I want to start with something
start with
funny.
Joke. Start with the
joke. I mean, they're never really that funny.
It's like a knock-knock or something from the internet.
But
let me say this. Will I be in heaven and somebody taps me on the shoulder and say, hey, the only reason I'm here is because I heard you preach? Probably not.
Okay. So what was the moment that... I mean, you knew you were funnier. I mean, I thought I was hilarious in grade school, and what I ended up doing, being a sports analyst.
Depends on what you're... Yeah, you got a lot of funny people on here. When did I know that I was going to be a comedian? Oh, man. I think at the frat house at Sanford University. I was a Pi Kappa Phi.
You always like cracking on people?
Always. We'd sit on the porch. I didn't drink in college. We sat on the porch, and all the frat brothers would come home.
The operative word in college.
Yeah, college, yeah.
And by the way...
I had a good run there for a little bit.
He went to a Baptist university. I don't think they thought it was a good idea to be drinking in college.
Nah, small Baptist Christian school, which is now in the NCAA tournament. It's a miracle. But, yeah, there wasn't too much. You had to drink, you had to have vodka in the Sprite glass. That's what was going on at the small Christian college back in 2003.
So, while you were sober with your sober frat, by the way, is that not oxymoronic?
Hilarious, yeah.
But I know Sanford well. My wife grew up around the corner, and so when did you know? Okay, man, I'm pretty funny.
Well, I think I would do these like fraternity. It was like a talent show or something like that, and they told me as a pledge. You know, you pledge, you have to do what they say.
Sure.
So they said you have to roast all the brothers. And I go, I have to? They go, you have to. I go, all right, that's my assignment, and I did it. And I had the full permission to go after everybody because they told me I could.
And we're talking, and roasting is, I mean, it's serious burn.
Oh, yeah. I crushed them. I go, but y'all told me to do this, so I'm kind of off the hook. There's a couple of guys that didn't talk to me for the rest of college, but I credit my start to the Pi Kappa Phi House on Salter Road.
When was that moment that did the crowds ever bother you when you went out and did even small groups? I mean, you're doing pretty big ones.
Oh, yeah, all the time. Do people ever yell at you here?
Yeah, but you get, I mean, it's different. I mean, this is my natural inhabitant. I have gone, I have been at big events, you know, thousands of people.
Yeah.
And when they tell you to be funny, I had this happen once. They said, we want you to, you were here last year.
Yeah.
We thought you were great, but we want you to tell jokes. So I went to some friends who were joke writers.
Oh, yeah.
And stop me if you've ever heard this one.
I'm ready for it.
He wrote for Leno.
Okay.
He said, this is the best joke I've ever written. And I gave it in front of two, and there wasn't a laugh.
No, nobody laughed?
No.
That's tough.
Where do you go after that?
Where do you go from there?
Because that happens all the time.
Because if you're just trying to deliver a speech and you get laughs, that's like an added bonus.
Yeah.
But when you say you're here
a comedian
for laughs,
and you don't get laughs.
Tough. The funniest joke I ever heard was Jeff Foxworthy told it to me. I was on a show with Jeff Foxworthy. He said, you might be a redneck if your son's name is Dale Jr. and your name's not Dale.
that is great.
That's not my joke.
That is funny.
You can't go wrong with that joke, dude.
I think he is one of the most unique. We've had
Jeff Foxworthy
to meet him a couple of times.
Oh yeah,
and he's
unbelievable.
He's told me the story about being on late night when you only have 5.5 minutes.
Oh yeah,
and then your first joke is so funny, they laugh for 30 seconds, and then you're completely out of
math
laughing
in your head. Yeah, you do, because you got 5.5 minutes.
What are those things like for you? Because, I mean, you're now doing pretty much everything.
I mean, yeah, when you do comedy on TV, they have a specific amount of time for you. So you go exactly like that. If you get a big laugh or you do some kind of something off the cuff, or you riff on something, you're trying to do math in your head, or like, all right, well, minus that joke. I mean, every show we do, we have a time clock down there in the bottom that says, hey, wrap it up. And if the crowd is on fire, you'll only get through half of your material, and they're like, you got to go.
So, John, how much depends on the part of the country you're in? I mean, you have to tailor. I mean, if you're in Georgia, you can tell football jokes, but if you're in New Hampshire,
lacrosse?
Yeah.
What are you making fun of up there? Yeah, it depends on it. Well, politically, there's a lot of differences if you go to Portland versus Birmingham.
Right.
Different. If you make a joke about Steve Spurrier in Washington, they're not going to, they're like, what? But if you make that joke in Gainesville,
funny.
LA, you just got to do your homework a little bit. Yeah. Where would be the best city to roast you in? Probably all Alabama?
Yeah, I think Birmingham would be pretty safe.
They know you in Birmingham.
Right around the corner from where you went to college.
Oh, yeah. Big Paul Feinbaum area, 100%.
So, as you're, when you walk out.
Yeah.
Are you studying the audience as you're walking out there looking around? I mean, you're thinking of your material, but you're also trying to, what are you doing?
Well, I think you gotta, what the key is, a little trick, the inside trick is, usually the comedy show you have openers.
Okay.
So you have a 2 or 3 openers.
Are you listening?
Yeah, you listen. Not to what they're saying. You know that you
listen
to what
crowd.
They're laughing at. Yeah, so, and it's funny, you make a joke about the cities that are more like politically correct or language is a little bit more protected, it makes it comedy easier.
Okay.
Because you have to cross the line to be funny.
Right.
So do it down. You do a joke down in Montgomery, Alabama. They're like, yeah, we talk like this.
Right.
You do a joke in where the speech is a little bit more protected. They're like, oh, I can't believe you said that, which makes it better.
I mean, do you poke at the audience at all, or is that risky?
Oh, yeah. Depends. You got to do.
You don't want to see like some guy in the audience with his wife and then.
Oh, yeah. And then just go after him.
Or her.
Yeah. Usually, anybody that we would ever go after, and that's a lot of the popular clips on TikTok and Instagram,
right,
is you see somebody getting themselves into some trouble.
Right.
But I always try to, they would have to self-identify as wanting to be part of the show. So I say, hey, does anybody raise your hand or make some noise if you, and they say, hey, I'll be a part of this. And
but
then
you know by the openers whether the crowd, I mean crowds can be
crowds
dead,
into
can't
it.
They?
Oh, yeah, 100%.
Although I don't know why you would go to a comedy club or a comedy show and not want to have fun.
That's what I've been asking for years. I go, you don't win by having your hands crossed here. Yeah. But
yeah,
usually, you want to hear the crowd dark. So
yeah.
You don't want to see anybody. You just want to listen. So if you do a joke about a certain topic and they're like, nope, then...
So when you walk, I mean, how good is your opening routine? I mean, the beginning, is that important?
Oh, yeah.
Or is it more building?
You would do something that's like for everybody. Like a very... If you're going to have any risky jokes that might be like divisive, make sure you get them on your side first. But something like... You ever had like a thought that you're like, you ever been driving on the road, you see that cyclist, you're like, I wonder if I just like, like that's, everybody gets that joke. Everybody will laugh at that because everybody's had that thought before.
How much of your own, whether it's accurate or not, how much of your life is part of what you're talking about?
Oh, 100%.
Okay.
I always say the joke is, the show is 100% real and 100% made up.
Okay.
So it's all, was my dad a pastor? Yeah. Was I homeschooled? Yeah. Did we grow up in church? Was I from Birmingham? Would I grow up in Atlanta? Was I homeschooled? All those things true. But did my brother launch me out of a tree onto the trampoline into the neighbor's pool? That was probably a combination of a couple different stories.
I realize this sounds very cookie cutter, but is there one or two things that audiences really do like to have fun with?
Everybody always likes to make fun of like hypocrisy,
okay,
right? So like you see one thing and it's actually the other, whether that be politics,
right,
social media, dating.
Is politics because this is so? Is that something that it's better to stay away from, or not? Or is it where you are?
Depends on what politics.
Yeah.
You kind of take it for both sides.
Because
I voted for. I'm just kidding. I know.
Because, I mean, you can lose on that, can't you?
Yeah, you can. Oh, yeah, you can lose. 100%. On politics, it depends on what side you take. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you go
like Kimmel the other night at the Oscars. He came back.
He's divisive? No, I'm just kidding.
That joke.
Yeah.
I mean, it was funny to the audience in the room.
Yeah.
But it was also
not on TV.
I guess when you're Jimmy Kimmel, you probably don't really care, do you?
Well, you do. You look at the ratings for sure. Yeah, and you could. It's everybody's like if you go, if you take it in form like a general, where everybody sees a certain thing.
Okay.
Maybe you're not making fun of like a certain like a candidate, but you are making fun of.
Okay.
Because everybody sees politics and is frustrated by
it.
For sure. That's what makes it better.
Yeah. So let's talk about what's next for you.
Oh yeah, baby. You go into the, depends on the selection show where Sanford is placed.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. You talk about my comedy career.
This has been a blast.
Absolutely.
You were the opening act for the commissioner of the South. No joke.
Sankey's coming on?
He'll be here in a second.
I'll warm up the seat for him. There he is right there.
Oh.
What's going on, brother? When you see that, it's time for the comedian to wrap it up.
It's time to go.
Yeah, he got no time. Oh, yeah.
Thank you very much. John,
absolutely,
really.
Paul.
But what
honor to have you.
The comedian John Crist. So much fun. The commissioner of the SEC. Straight ahead.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Back as we continue here at the SEC tournament, and some of you by now have seen it or know it, but a monumental upset early on here, Tennessee going down to Mississippi State. Mississippi State definitely making its case for the tournament quite convincing. It was 9 years ago today that our next guest was introduced as the Southeastern Conference Commissioner, and what an amazing journey. I know what a tumultuous and nail-biting time that was. It's been congratulations on a truly amazing 9 years.
Yeah, well, we had a president's meeting Wednesday and Thursday, and I talked about, they had asked me to provide a 10-year vision, and I said it missed a lot of things between 2015 and 2024. We've done good work nonetheless. We have great people around us, and exciting to be here in Nashville again.
I mean, this is often where the interviewer will say, well, Commissioner, did you realize? But the fact that day you were known inside the Beltway as the associate commissioner, but today, according to all the people in the media, I mean, you really sit at the vanguard of this sport as the most influential figure. That's not easy to talk about, but it is quite an accomplishment nevertheless.
It is, and I think it's first a tribute to the Southeastern Conference and the leadership that it, the entity, provides. And you know, to be in the chair of leading is special, something that has to be respected. It is a dynamic environment and more dynamic than anything I've ever experienced yet. It's really rewarding just to see that highlight film that rolled right before we joined. All of the name, image, and likeness, congressional testimony, court cases, kind of melts away when you're at a basketball game watching them play, or at our swimming and diving championship a few weeks ago, watching future Olympians compete. Those are great, great realities to experience, and it's a privilege to be in this role.
And this arena has been a big part of it, because basketball, we had your assistant commissioner on for basketball the other day, and just to think about what is happening right now with Mississippi State and then so many other venues throughout this weekend of where this league has come.
In March of 2015, I was announced as the eighth commissioner. In March of 2016, we only had three teams selected to the NCAA tournament, and that was a rough day. And we began then just trying to think differently. In our office, we don't hire coaches, we don't build facilities, we don't recruit players, but we do set a foundation. I felt weren't having the right conversations about the game of basketball, particularly men's basketball. And you just see the support, the extensions this week of three of our coaches who've come in new and have built momentum. They're all under NCAA tournament consideration. Coach of the year among one of them. That's the kind of thing that has turned the corner where, you know, I think the NCAA committee right now has 9 of our men's teams under consideration. That's not my prediction, but it's rewarding that they have to evaluate that level of depth in this league.
And the women's game speaks for itself. Oh. You just came from Greenville, and that's really been one of the stories of the year in college sports.
To go undefeated is pretty remarkable, to have to be the 2-time defending national champion conference with two different teams.
Exactly.
is remarkable. We've seen progress. We have a chance there to have probably eight teams participate in the NCAA Women's Tournament, leading to the Final Four in Cleveland. And I would really like to be busy on that Final Four weekend between Cleveland and Phoenix. There's not really a direct, quick flight, but it'd be rewarding to see our teams on that mountaintop of both Final Fours.
That would be, and that has been your weekend there before over the years. Let's talk about so many other issues. As we are coming on the air, there is reports, confirmation, I don't know what they are, about the CFP, where you have been another critical role of yours.
We've been at work on this. I shared with our presidents, the first time I made a presentation about an expansion idea of the college football playoff was Destin in 2019. That's like a lifetime ago. And so the work began, the presentations made in 2020. We're here 4 years, and I think we're really at the finish line for the future of the college football playoff. It has been an intense amount of work, a lot of credit to my colleagues for adjustments, a lot of respect that I think we've properly earned that can be healthy across the board. Obviously support the Southeastern Conference. I haven't seen what's been released yet, but we've tried to position ourselves from a stature of strength, and that's going to help us moving forward in our leadership role.
There are a thousand topics, but we'll cover just a handful. But there have been a report, I think yesterday, about the incredibly interesting position of college athletics right now. And you, as you mentioned, all the things that are getting attention, but there's such conversations about the brand value of what you do every day. And I think the audience would like to hear you address the success of this entity.
Well, in some ways, I could just like lay silent on you and say, look at the people around us.
Yeah.
It's about our fans, and it's about the young people who come in to compete, to grow, to be educated, to participate, and then launch into life. But with all of the different reports, the fans of the Southeastern Conference make this special. We have a 90-year tradition where I literally had a conversation with a leader in private equity this spring who said, you have done such a good job in the Southeastern Conference, and I mean that collectively, that you've created a problem for others. And that's what you see on Saturdays in the South in the fall. Across 14, soon to be 16, of our leading university campuses in this country. We have challenges that have to be met and resolved. We have problems that have lingered and haven't been addressed. And by lingered, I mean for decades. We can do that most effectively as a unit of 16 universities through our presidents and chancellors' leadership. And our presidents and chancellors made that clear on Wednesday and Thursday. We've announced the formation of an advisory group with our Big Ten colleagues. That's not been achieved before. I think that creates the opportunity for leadership, and we've intentionally been slow at launching because we've needed to work through some of our own college football playoff issues that have been full-time. We gathered our athletics directors for a conversation and table setting. We're scheduling our presidents and chancellors for that dialogue. And we have to move expeditiously, but not foolishly, not taking what I would call a one-way door solution, which means you can't come back through. Jeff Bezos has used this example. There are decisions that are one-way doors where you can't re-enter, and there are two-way doors. And how do we continue to relate to our colleagues with the breadth of opportunity in Division I, position ourselves to make decisions that allow some flexibility moving forward, and rather than disenfranchise people, bring more people in, because the fans behind us and surrounding us are representative of millions who expect us in the Southeastern Conference to be together and to solve problems that lead us forward in a new way.
And I think that's interesting because, you know, one of our colleagues, former coaches, said the other day that about this, he was speaking of college football. It's not the same sport he got into 50 years ago. We're talking about Nick Saban.
Right.
But you encountered every single weekend on a campus somewhere or at a site. And while there may be a disconnect on some level, it's hard to see when you're walking around an arena like this.
It does. It melts away. The cynicism melts away. The conflicts melt away. Now, I think the stress that you hear in that comment is that I said it to you in Destin of 22. It's never going to be the way that it was, but it doesn't have to be the way that it is. And we have to work on the way that it is and the way it can be. There are no simple solutions to our complex problems. And the definition of a simple solution is when someone says, if they would just fill in the blank.
Right.
Because there is no just fill in the blank and things magically work. There are unintended consequences or really unimagined outcomes. There are outcomes that you can't imagine that take different twists. There are now external pressures that we've forgotten about. And I actually had the opportunity to speak with Nick this morning just about his interactions and learning from his ability to separate himself from the football field and then talk about the overall health of college football in a different way. And I think that's an important piece for all of us moving forward. And I know our coaches who met in February, football coaches, are all united around this atmosphere doesn't work very well. It doesn't work well for young people. Yep, there's some economic benefit in a new way, and we have to dig in and find solutions. And those solutions aren't just going to magically appear, so that's like every day of our existence right now.
Finally, we're still some time, but because there are a lot of championships to go through, but we are moving toward this college football season with the two new additions. I know that's a topic that will continue to come up, but when you can think about other things, which isn't easy.
We jumped right to football. I was hoping we could talk about July 4th first and then go to football season.
We could, yeah. But we're around the corner from July 1st.
We are, and that's the day. We'll celebrate the entry of two new members. July 1st is that date. We'll officially be 16 teams. If you visit our office, we have flags hanging from the rafters. We grew that to 16 about a year ago as preparation. Just kudos to our staff, the staff and leadership at the University of Texas and at the University of Oklahoma. The way we've collaborated have helped educate, orient, and build the momentum. I expect it to be seamless, and in many ways it has. We had the athletics directors in our meetings first by video conference in August of 21. They've been a continuing presence. The presidents from both Oklahoma and Texas were with us this week. Their basketball teams were playing in Kansas City as they wrap up their Big 12 experience, but it's all about preparation for the future, looking forward to the fall.
Commissioner, we'll let you get back. The games are about to start. But thank you for coming, and we look forward to this.
Thank you for the conversation, as always, and look forward to a weekend of wonderful basketball.
The commissioner of the Southeastern Conference, Greg Sankey. We'll take a short break. We're back after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Back to the program. We appreciate all you being here, and what an amazing start we've already had here early in the show, but quite a bit happening. We have talked to Don Davenport in the past on covering games. It's so great to see you. You also spent a little time, you live here, you spent some time in the media here as well, and what I admire the most about you, Don, is that it's as an investigative journalist, I'm trying to figure out who you're cheering for today.
Here, look, I even got to pop these up. Look at that.
Oh, my goodness.
See, so during football season, name on them and everything.
That is cool.
We're ready to go. War Eagle. So during football season, you know, I have to stay professional and not cheer and all of that. But it's basketball season. This is my hometown. My Auburn Tigers are here. Let's go.
Yeah, I was wearing my Tennessee Vols until about 30 minutes ago.
I will say this. There are a lot of sad Vols fans
Oh my goodness.
Walking around here.
Yeah, there will be a few seats, tickets available outside for tomorrow.
You know what the spin's going to be, though. Oh, well, we'll be rested for the NCAA tournament. It's all right. We'll be good to go.
I understand them being upset. But, and I think it has more to do with fans in Nashville. They want to go see their team. But they'll probably lose a spot on the seed line. But mm-hmm. I wouldn't read too much into losing when you're the best team in the league.
Yeah. And let's be honest, you have the best player in the country, I think, in Dalton Connect. So, you know, these tournaments are all about matchups. We always talk about it in postseason play, right? It is all about matchups. That was not a good matchup for Tennessee. No. It never has been a good matchup for Tennessee. They're too strong. They're too long. They've struggled with that. And when you shoot, 20% in the first half? I mean, you're digging your grave.
Yeah, you can't do it. So let's talk about a little bit your life. I'm fascinated by how people end up doing what they do. So let's go back and peel the curtain about how did you get into this rather crazy business?
I know, this crazy business. Well, I graduated from Auburn, clearly. I played volleyball back in the day at Auburn, walked on my freshman year, ended up getting a scholarship, and absolutely fell in love with Auburn. I thought for a while I wanted to be a doctor. I thought I wanted to be a vet. I thought I wanted to be a teacher. I changed my major 8 times. Finally, my academic advisor was like, I need you to pick something and just go with it. So, ended up in mass communication, always grew up around sports, loved sports. Like, my dad graduated from Duke. Kentucky fans don't hate me. I grew up a Duke fan. Kentucky fans already hate me. But, you know, I grew up a Duke fan. So we went to basketball games growing up. We went to baseball spring training growing up. And so it was always something that we did as a family. My mom's a Georgia Bulldog. And my brother and I both went to Auburn. So she's still distraught about those decisions. But we were a sports family. And that's what I ended up, you know, eventually doing. Is that was my major. I did an internship. I fell in love with local TV and started in local TV, carrying a camera, doing my own editing, like doing everything. Ended up, even my second job out of college, I ended up getting laid off in Richmond, Virginia. And I thought, maybe this business isn't for me. Got a job here in Nashville. This was 18 years ago now. Got a job here in Nashville as the number 3, toting a camera. Got to do sideline reporting for the preseason games for the Tennessee Titans, and the rest was history. And now I've been covering college football for 10, 11 years for ESPN. So you got to get lucky along the way, but, you know, sometimes when maybe one door closes, another opens. And I just fell in love with this city when I got here and decided I didn't want to leave. And you see it.
Oh no! I've watched. I grew up in Memphis, and there was a time when Memphis would look at Nashville and go, "Nothing there," and now it's the other way around.
There's still a lot of hatred between Memphis and Nashville. That, right, Paul?
No, I do. I mean, growing up in Memphis, going through Nashville on the way to college. I mean, it is night and day, West Tennessee to East Tennessee, but mm-hmm. I always felt on solid ground in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. It's crazy now, and it's funny too. By the way, thanks for having me on after like the most important man in college football. Appreciate that. You have like funny guy comedian first, Greg Sankey, and it's like, oh yeah, we'll just throw.
I am actually relaxed now though, because the comedians always make me on edge, because you're trying to set them up to be funny,
right?
And Sankey, I mean, I've interviewed him a few times. But you don't want to waste time,
right?
So he's
a business guy.
I mean, you're like fun. I mean, I have no fear.
I even have the face paint. Like, how many people come on your show with a team face paint?
What was your position in volleyball?
So back then, I hate that I'm telling my age, but back then I was a defensive specialist. Okay. Nowadays, with the game, they have created that position to where you can just play the back row the whole time, libero. So that's what it's called nowadays. But obviously, I'm short. You know, a little of the underdog mentality there. So came in.
When you were there, who was the football coach?
It was. Now you're really aging me, Paul.
Bowden. I covered all that, so it will tell me. It will give me a little indicator.
My freshman year was the Bowden crazy drama, Auburn fans, I know you remember it.
You got fired.
Yep, that was my freshman year, and then Tommy Tuberville, obviously, after that.
Funny story, not really that funny for Terry Bowden, but I knew something was up. I had an incredibly senior source. He called me early that morning, and then he called me about 2:30 in the afternoon and said, Terry Bowden has just gotten fired. I said, is it out yet? He said, no. I said, well, who knows? He said, you're the only person in the media that knows. I said, well, what should I do with it? He said, go with it. So we were in the middle. I was on a news talk station, and we interrupted Rush Limbaugh.
Wow.
And broke the story, and the sports information director at Auburn called and said, you're completely wrong. He said, that is not true. I said, well, I'm sorry. I mean, I'll tell you later who my source was.
I'm guessing if you went with it, it was a pretty darn good source.
Yeah. It was. And the AP put out a story saying, the university has denied it. And I'm like going, I finally called the guy. I said, he said, yes, I know what I'm talking about.
Oh, my goodness.
And then about 2 hours, because I think the team was en route to maybe it was a home game. I can't remember.
I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, it was a home game. It was a home game.
So long ago, but yeah.
But it was one of the scariest days of my career because, I mean, I've been wrong many times, but this was.
That's a big one.
You don't interrupt Rush Limbaugh.
Right. That's kind of a big one. Yeah.
For Terry Bowden, but that was really quite a time.
Yeah, it was. moving forward now, hopefully Hugh Freeze can kind of turn things around there at Auburn and get it going. And I feel good about it. So I actually ended up working their bowl game.
Oh, did you?
Yes, with Maryland. And so,
that must have been a dismal afternoon.
I mean, it wasn't ideal, right? But luckily, you kind of detach yourself if you're covering your own team. And Mike Loxley is one of my favorite people ever. So, yeah, but I think, they're kind of moving in the right direction there. And it was interesting to me, too, because we talk all the time about head coaches who are like those offensive minds in play calling, right? And I remember, I must work the Music City Bowl often. I worked the Auburn-Purdue Music City Bowl when Gus Malzahn was the head coach. And I don't know if you remember that, but that was when he retook over play calling duties.
He did that a lot.
Yeah, and they demolished Purdue. I mean, they put up like 80 on Purdue. But I remember him telling me, I thought about it, and why would I give up what got me here? Why would I give up what I do so well and what got me here? And I've never forgotten that from Gus. And so now I look at Hugh and I'm like, you're looking at me like I'm crazy. Why are you looking at me like I'm crazy, Paul? Anyway, so I look at Hugh and I'm like, he's going to take back play calling.
It's not what you're saying. It's the war paint.
Oh, it gets you?
Yeah.
I know. You can't take me seriously, can you? That's all right. It happens. I want to know, Paul? What does a nightlife in Nashville look like for Paul Feinbaum?
It depends. I mean, I went out one of the nights. I did not go out
you
the
did.
Other night.
You hit Broadway?
No. I have done that. It's a little scary.
Yeah. It's a little intense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I didn't. But I have. I've done Broadway. What about you?
Now that you're a citizen here,
do you still partake?
Never.
No.
Only when people come to visit in town, and then we go, and we always have the best time ever.
That's like, I did not ever get to Graceland growing up in Memphis until I left.
Isn't that funny?
I went back, and I think my wife wanted to go, you would live it, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah, yeah. And it's so, I told you, I've been in Nashville forever, and it's crazy how much this town has grown, even in the last 5 years, right? Which, by the way, if you're thinking about moving to Nashville, we are full. We're full. We don't need anybody else. You can come visit. We love you. We'll hug you. We'll all scream War Eagle, but we're full. But it's been amazing
to see
this.
This was a blast. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you, Paul. Good to see you. And can I say it? War Eagle! Hey!
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Ten seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Live in Nashville. Time for maybe a really quick call here. And how about Matt as we close out hour number one? What do you got, Matt?
Hey, brother. How you doing, man? I miss you, Paul. When I see you in College Station for football game, you still owe me that drink, man. You might just see, brother, that Blue Hawaiian or... I wanted to say, for the Ole Miss Rebels, you suck in basketball. We own you. You're next, Kentucky. And then as for Lane Kiffin, when he goes to Florida, Florida's dumpster fire and picks Stewie, we're going to roast some hogs, Paul. But I want to see how you've been, man, because I'm going to move into my own apartment. It's a fixed income-based apartment with not three times the rent, two times the rent. When I see you in College Station, like I said, man, you might teach your brother opening that drink, Paul.
Great to hear from you, Matt. We're back. Second hour, straight ahead.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.